The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Wonderful. Yay. Doesn't that feel better? All of a sudden we're friends. We're not these strangers we're sitting. Yeah. Great. So the topic for reflection that I've chosen for tonight is living more fully through contemplating death. Heavy topic. Okay. What's that?
I'm with woohoo.
With yoo-hoo! Somebody's excited. All right. Any other takers? Anybody ready to bolt? Because we're going to talk about death. Mindfulness of death, maranasati, it's actually a practice in Buddhism. There are lots of practices. There's mindfulness, there's mindfulness of vipassana, there's metta and brahmaviharas, which are cultivation of the heart qualities. And so there are a lot of different practices, lots of contemplations. And contemplation of death is a very important practice, which is not often taught. It's interesting. It's not often taught. And I have to say that it's one of my favorite practices. I've spent time both on retreat and at home practice. I took a couple of years of leave of absence and did a lot of contemplation of death. And I'll say more about that. But life became so real and so fresh because death was on my shoulders. It wasn't scary. It was just really, I felt more alive than ever in my life, the period when I was doing death contemplation. So just wanted to share that because it's a practice that's near and dear to me. So just to share how this practice sits within Buddhism, the Buddha has said, of all the footprints in the jungle, footprint of the elephant is supreme. Of all the contemplations, the contemplation of death is supreme. So the same way that the footprint of the elephant is largest in the jungle compared to all the little critters, of that is supreme, that's the biggest, that's the most supreme. The same way contemplation of death is such an important contemplation that makes your other practices, brings more urgency, brings more aliveness to your life and to your practice. It makes living more immediate just by, you don't really have to then watch your breath as carefully because you feel, wow, my time is limited. It just, your practice just livens up from the fire in the belly instead of really from this top level head, like, oh, I need to pay attention to my present moment. You get on fire when you actually contemplate, like, wow, my time is limited. It really is. And all these things I plan I will do, and I will meditate, and I'll practice, and I will be less angry, and I'll be kinder. Yeah. It's like, whoa. There may not be that much time for me to, at some point in the future, develop all these wonderful qualities. This is the time. It's right here, right now. Because when I get into my car and drive home, I may not get there. Statistically, I really may not get there. It's one of the most dangerous things we could be doing in our daily life, driving around. So it's also so interesting that the topic of death and contemplating death can seem kind of scary, can kind of far out, like, well, I want to think about life, I don't want to think about death, oh, I'll have time. But again, what I found in my own practice is that contemplation of death actually really makes living more immediate. It's really living more fully through contemplation of death. So One of the amazing, it's actually an Indian legend that one of the most amazing things in the world is that human beings watch everyone else die around them. You see people die, but you don't realize that you will die too. We don't. It's really hard for the ego to contemplate its own demise. It's really, really hard. Okay, how many of us know up here that we're going to die? Show of hands. How many of us know here, really, that we're going to die? We're not going to be, none of us in 100 years, not a single person who's here in this room is going to be alive on this earth. Not a single person in this room or people listening to this when it's recorded. We're not going to be here. We won't. We'll all pass. Well, you're saying so, but you know, that's another story. But statistically. And what makes contemplation of death actually both interesting and somewhat challenging is to really open up the psyche that it is not going to be here. And there are lots of different methods, different strategies. So I want to tell you a little bit about how this practice became my favorite practice, as I alluded earlier. So years ago, I took a couple of years of leave of absence to really dedicate myself to practice and contemplation. And sometime during that period, towards the beginning of it, my contemplation was veering from nothingness to nihilism, which is a dark spot that at a wrong turn that sometimes practice pitfall that can happen. So it was getting very dark, and I couldn't quite figure out the difference between emptiness, nothingness, and nihilism. If everything goes away, then what's the point? So, and that was bringing up depression for me. And I remember I went on a retreat, and I talked with a Buddhist teacher, an esteemed Buddhist teacher, who heard me out. And he's a Western Buddhist teacher, and has had quite a philosophical bent in his teachings. Also, he's both read and written about the Western philosophers. So he said, I've gone through that in my practice, that, you know, nihilism veering to depression. I've gone through that. What you should do is death contemplation. And I thought, wait a minute, wait, that doesn't sound right, right? I'm telling you I'm getting depressed, and you say, do death contemplation. But the logic of that was that when you actually contemplate about death, that shakes you out of your complacency, shakes you out of this, like, oh, it doesn't matter, oh, you're kind of like slumping around. Because then life becomes so crisp, you realize how limited time is. So I took his advice to heart, and I did do death contemplation in many, many different forms that I'll talk about. And that's what happened. It, realizing that time was limited and how precious life really was, and really recognizing this precious human birth, this opportunity that I have as a human being in this world, it really brought me more alive. So it had the effect that he intended, even though it sounded quizzical and paradoxical. So there are lots of different ways and methods to do death contemplation. And actually, before I talk about some of the methods, I want to also mention one other reason why it's recommended to do that. According to Marasati Sutta, a practitioner should reflect on the many possibilities which could bring death, and then turn her thoughts to the unskillful mental qualities she has yet to abandon. quote, this is from a sutta, just as when a person whose turban, I love the imagery, pay attention to the imagery, just as when a person whose turban or head was on fire would put forth extra desire, effort, diligence, endeavor, undivided mindfulness and alertness to put out the fire on his turban or head, in the same way the practitioner should put forth extra desire, effort, diligence, endeavor, undivided mindfulness and alertness for the abandoning of those very same evil, unskillful qualities. So it's really a way to bring in skillful effort. And again, I think it happens naturally. It's not something that we do. And for me, when I feel like the death is on my shoulders, this friend, and I'm living with that awareness that time is limited, and who knows when the death comes and how it comes. My mind spends less time in unskillful areas, like when it's going to, I don't know, reveries or stories or sadness or anger or whatever. It's like, do I really want to spend my little precious time in these mind states? It just becomes much more crisp. So with all of this, there are different ways to contemplate death. There are many different recipes. There are 9 steps in Tibetan Buddhism. So I'm going to draw in from Tibetan Buddhism and also bring in from Theravada. But I just learned about this recently. And actually, I think it's a lovely contemplation. And what I would like to suggest is we actually get into our meditative posture and I read each line, each contemplation, and we go through it together. We just contemplate it together. How does that sound? Up for it? Yeah? Okay, let's give it a try. So get into your meditation posture, feeling comfortable. I invite you to either have your gaze soft in front of you or have your eyes closed. The first contemplation is that death is inevitable. We're all going to die. I am going to die. It's inevitable. Just as I live, I will someday pass away. It's the natural law. Death is inevitable. It will happen. There is no question about it. Second contemplation is our lifespan is decreasing continuously. Every moment of our lives, we're getting a moment closer to our death. Like a train that has no stopping, it will move, it's moving closer and closer to its end. Our lifespan is decreasing continuously. The third contemplation is that death will come whether or not I'm prepared for it. Death will come, whether or not I'm prepared for it. The fourth contemplation. My life expectancy is uncertain. My life expectancy is uncertain. I might imagine myself when I'm 80, 90, 100 in a comfortable bed passing. It may not be the case. My life expectancy is uncertain. Many people die young, many in the middle age, many old. Who knows what my lot will be? Really, who knows? There are many causes of death, is the next contemplation, the fifth one. There are many causes of death. I know that death is inevitable. But there might be many different ways that this life will end. Allow yourself to conjure up some ways. I may have a car accident. I might drown. I might get ill. I might fall and hit my head. There are so many ways. There are many, many causes of death. The sixth contemplation. The human body is fragile and vulnerable. My body is fragile and vulnerable. It's only a breath that separates me. From death. Only a heartbeat, only a breath between living and dying. My life is dependent on this breath and this heartbeat. This body is quite fragile, quite vulnerable. The seventh contemplation. At the time of death, my material possessions are of no use to me. No matter how much I have, I get, I accumulate. They're of no use. They're like leaves that are scattered. At the time of my death, my material possessions and resources are of no use to me. Material possessions don't come with us. The eighth contemplation, my loved ones, their care, their love, cannot keep me from death. My loved ones cannot keep me from death. And the ninth contemplation, my own body cannot help me at the time of death. It is vulnerable. It may struggle. But this body cannot help me at the time of death. It's subject to it, not immune from it. Now, for the next part of this contemplation, I invite you to say out loud while you're still sitting in meditation the names of some people who've died, relatives, people you know. Just collectively say their name. I invite you to say it out loud. It's a powerful practice. Say the names of the people you know who've passed away. Now say the names of a few people who are close to death. For the next part of this contemplation, I invite you to say the age and the cause of death. Now I invite you to say out loud how much time you think you have left, the age at which you think you're going to die. And now say out loud how much time you're devoting to developing your mind and heart and practicing. Could be time per day, per week, per month, or any way you want to say it. Just, this is for you. Now I invite you to open your eyes and come back to the room. So before we move on, there's more I can say, but be wonderful if we get into groups of, say, three or four and just share for a few moments. You don't have to, actually. You can just sit quietly and you don't have to talk. But if you choose to, you can either sit and just contemplate or you can get into a group and just talk about what that was like for you to go through these contemplations. What came up for you? There's no right and wrong, good or bad. So I invite you to get into groups if you wish, just three or four people, maybe three. You can self-organize. Again, you don't have to if you don't want to. Raise your hand if you want to be in a group. and you don't have a partner or you don't have a group. And to let you know, it's a very profound practice to speak and be held witness. It's really, really powerful practice. A lot can come up that didn't before. So just informally say what came up for you. Yeah, be groups of two if you want. It's all good. Or not. We have about one more minute to wrap up. Okay. Please thank your partners and come to the big group. Great. Thank you. Thank you all. Yeah.
So
one of them was working. Great. As long as we have one working, we're good to go. So it would be lovely to hear some of the reflections, what came up for you. Don't be shy. We don't have a lot of time. Literally, we don't have a lot of time.
Sure. I found it very challenging mm-hmm. to express the names. And maybe that's the right word, is express, because it wasn't the language of English or Spanish or Japanese or Sanskrit or something. It was the emotion. Mm-hmm. It was expressing the emotion around that person. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's the death that's normal and natural. Mm-hmm. One of the names I mentioned, Stanley, died at 91. Mm-hmm. That's not unpredictable. Mm-hmm. The other one was my sister, who died at age 54. Mm-hmm. And that was more challenging.
Yeah.
And I actually felt a tear in my eye, and I realized, it's been 3 years, but I realized, Teresa, I realized there was more pain inside of me, typical guy, right, blocking it. Yeah. The shield, the steel shield over the night. Yeah, so, but thank you. I want to thank you. This has been, personally, I suspect for many of us, this has been very helpful, kind of checking in.
Thank you. Any other observations? What was it like for you?
I was just sharing with the Bruce and I didn't Sue that it really put me in touch with that you really don't know how much time you have.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, I know some people that have died very young recently, and you know, my parents died in their 80s. And I also shared I've had a couple of close calls that made me. At the time, I mean, it definitely shifted everything permanently, but at the time, there really was that kind of vividness that you were talking about.
Yeah.
I was just very aware that you have an expectation, but that's sort of a fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Another delusion.
Yeah, delusion. Yep. So many of them. That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
I found a lot of gratitude coming in speaking the people's names. There was at first sadness, but then kind of afterwards and sort of calling up their energy and their persona in my mind. It was sort of a lot of gratefulness that someone like that had been in my life. And I kind of felt that love from them again. Just really happy that for some time they had touched my life.
Nice. Thank you. Yeah. Any other thoughts? We haven't heard from the balcony yet. Not to put pressure on you guys.
During the contemplations,
wasn't able to hear them all, but I did hear a few. And very, when I came, this question occurred to me: who is going to die? Because when I think of death, I can think of ceasing of breathing and all of the things that are going on in the body. And when I ask who, it's not the name, but it's just a question: who is going to die? It came up. Or maybe dying, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
That really deep down inside, I do not know myself. So I don't know.
So one thought that comes up as you speak the question is, one thing that we know is that this makeup of body and personality and all of that, that doesn't continue. So above and beyond, so this body will not continue, this body. And this conglomeration of psyche and personality and memories, and that also won't continue. I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, that's understandable, but it's interesting that, because I came up, there is this question that emerges: is there something that continues? Maybe there's nothing that we know of.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Nonetheless, it's an open question, isn't it?
So I'll offer the Theravada party line. So what does get passed on in this is the karmic potentiality. So the way that could be understood is, if you have a billiard ball and it's moving and it hits another billiard ball, right? It's that movement, is that potentiality. So it's not, the billiard ball doesn't continue, but it touches another. So the idea of rebirth is the karmic potentiality is that movement gets continued in rebirth. That's the traditional party line of Theravada, and I just bring it up because you asked. But you know, one does not have to believe in anything to practice, and to practice death contemplation. And the only thing that is certain is that we are alive in this body in this moment now. So what happens next? May not quite be relevant. I'm reminded of the teaching by the Buddha, where someone comes up and basically wants to know about what happens after death and blah blah blah. And the Buddha says, okay, imagine that someone has shot you by an arrow, by a poisonous arrow. You probably know this story. Someone has shot you by a poisonous arrow, and someone has come to you to help you to take the poisonous arrow out and heal you. Would you say, no, wait, tell me who shot the arrow, what's his name, what's his age, what did he have for breakfast, what did he do last night, who's his mother, tell me about his family, and also tell me about the wood, which tree is it from, tell me about the sapling. Are you you want to know about all this stuff before I help you and take this? So that's the way the Buddha says, I teach you about liberation right here, right now. Pontificating about what happens, in the world, where has the life come from, where does it go? Those are not immediate teachings that I offer. So a way that Maranasati contemplation of death can really make us alive and help us in this very life to align with our priorities. Who do we want to be? How do we want to live? I'd like to hold it that way. Yeah, thank you. So we have just another minute to go, and I wanted to say a couple of quick things. One is I wanted to give credit to Eugene Cash. On Saturday, he had a lovely day long at Spirit Rock on Maranasati, and the that's when I was exposed to the 9 reflections, which are from Tibetan Buddhism, and the questions of actually the contemplation of saying the words out loud. So I wanted to give him credit, where credit is due. And also, one thing that I really want to mention before we go is a couple of other ways that traditionally in Theravada, death contemplation is taught that I've done also. I didn't bring him in earlier because one of them is contemplation of corpse, and I thought the 9 contemplations was a little easier to deal with than a, you know, 1 hour talk, or even shorter than an hour talk. That is often done by actually seeing a corpse, contemplating the corpse, or looking at photographs of a corpse and contemplating that this body of mine too is of the same nature as that body, is going to be like that body and has not gone past the condition of becoming like that body. So really contemplating a corpse in different stages of decay and looking at the photographs, which can be difficult, but really seeing that it's a body and this body will become like that too. So that's one is a traditional way to do death contemplation. Another way is in every in-breath and out-breath, and I've done this and it can be extremely powerful, every in-breath, you think this is my last in-breath, every out-breath, this is the last out-breath, after I breathe out, this is it, bye-bye world. And really, over and over and over, with every breath, you contemplate death, and it just really makes you so alive, it sharpens the mind, it's amazing. Try it in your meditation tomorrow morning. It's really, it focuses your mind. Another one that I'm going to offer to you to try out tonight when you lie in bed, imagine that this is it. I'm not going to wake up in the morning. Goodbye, world. You're lying down. That can be a very powerful practice also. It's an easy practice because you go to bed every night anyway, unless you fall asleep at your desk working. But that's another contemplation I liked. And there are other ways to imagine yourself dying and things like that. But anyway, let's end there since we are out of time. So let's dedicate the merit. May the merit of our practice together tonight of contemplating death be a cause and condition for liberation and freedom of all beings, including ourselves. Thank you for your practice.